Hello, this is John Cleese, and you're listening to the Podcast Network.
But if we're honest, we will look into the mirror and see what the truth is, and see what the truth is, and see what the truth is.
The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised.
It will be podcast.
Well, it's a rainy old day in Brisbane. It's the 8th of December, 2011. My name's Cameron Riley. You're listening to the No Illusions podcast. Why do many people in the Middle East distrust the United States, the United Kingdom? Why? Is it because, as George W. Bush famously said, they hate us for our freedoms? Or are there deeper historical and more genuine reasons? Anyone who's listened to this show over the years knows that there's more to the story. I've talked many times in the past about some great books like Legacy of Ashes by New York Times Pulitzer Prize winning journalist Tim Weiner. It's a history of the CIA, or People's History of the United States by recently departed Howard Zinn. Of course, Chomsky features prominently and has been interviewed on this show about America and their geopolitical strategy during the 20th and 21st century. And my show today is on one specific period in history, which occurred in 1953, when the United States and the United Kingdom conspired together to secretly, covertly overthrow the democratically elected government of Iran. Now, this was a watershed moment in the history of the CIA. The CIA was newly created after World War II and was originally just an intelligence analysis outfit for the president. Their job was to brief the president of the United States on what was going on in the rest of the world. They weren't set up to intervene or to overthrow governments. They were just set up to provide analysis of global affairs. But secretly, in the late 40s and early 50s, they actually created a revolution in Iran to overthrow a moderate democratic government. Now, why would they do that? Isn't the United States all about supporting democracy? Well, that's bullshit, as we all know. They're there to support their economic interests. That's what they're interested in. And what was happening in Iran is that in the early 50s, under their Prime Minister Mossadegh, the Iranians had decided to nationalize British oil interests because the Iranians, under a previous arrangement when the country was run by the British, were getting very, very little of the oil revenues that the country was generating. And at the time, it was becoming one of the major oil-producing countries in the world. And oil, obviously, in the middle of the 20th century, was becoming more and more important. And Mossadegh wanted to keep more of that revenue in the country to support the people of Iran. Well, the British didn't like that. And they conspired with the United States to overthrow Mossadegh's government and reinstall the Reza Shah, who was a brutal, brutal, violent, disturbed, insane man, who then acted as an American-supported dictator of his country for the next 25-odd years until his final overthrow by the Ayatollah Khomeini and his forces during the White Revolution of 1979. Now, my guests today, a couple of guys behind a company called Cognito Comics. And they recently released an iPad app called Operation Ajax. It's an animated graphic novel that tells this entire story unlike it's ever been told before. And it's one of the most exciting things I've seen happen on the iPad because it's actually teaching us, it's educating us about a very important era in recent modern history. And as many of you know, I've hosted the Napoleon podcast for six or so years with David Markham. And part of the excitement and enjoyment that we get from that show is educating a new audience on what we think is a very important period of history, when the French, first under the Revolution and then under Napoleon, were trying to bring about the benefits of the Revolution to the people of Europe and were fighting defensive wars for decades against the United Monarchs of Europe, who were trying to maintain their dictatorships of European countries. And Napoleon was all about more freedom, liberty, equality, etc. So in a similar vein, this app teaching this period of history is very exciting because it helps us understand and unravel and peel away the layers of the tensions between not just Iran and the United States, but between the Arabic populations and the Persians and the Arabs. I don't want to treat them all as one because I know they don't like that. And the tensions between those people, let's say the Muslim people of the Middle East and the Western world. You know, they don't hate us for our freedoms, as George W. Bush said. They hate us because of our intervention in their countries over the last century or so, the way that their people have been treated brutally as a result of Western intervention and financing, all for economic reasons on behalf of the Western powers. And, this iPad app, Operation Ajax, teaches this period of history in a very engaging, very exciting way, particularly for a young audience, a new audience, and anyone really who's not familiar with this period of history. Even if you're not the kind of person that would normally read a comic, I highly encourage you to get a copy of Operation Ajax, whack it on your iPad, soon to be on your iPhone, and learn about what happened, because it will help you understand a lot of other things that have happened since then and things that are happening today. So with that, let me throw to my interview with Daniel and Ash from Cognito Comics that I recorded this morning while having my Podomo Lot 23 Connecticut and a nice latte.
My name is Daniel Berwin. I'm the founder and creative director at Cognito Comics, and I was the one who came up with a great idea to do this project.
Excellent. And Ash?
My name is Ash Awis. I handle business development over here at Cognito Comics, which is, kind of your sales and marketing and strategy and all sorts of business stuff.
Ash is my handler.
As we discovered. Brian, why don't you tell us a little bit about... Daniel, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Cognito Comics story? I mean, how did it come together? How did it start?
Sure. So in 2002, when the Iraq War broke out, I was left asking a lot of questions. And I went into the video game industry shortly thereafter, and I worked for a couple of companies. And after working on Tony Hawk 8, I was kind of thinking as an artist that there was probably something more meaningful I could be putting my passion into. And around that time, 2007, end of 2000, end of 2006, 2007, I discovered Stephen Kinzer's work, and I was blown away. I had read Overthrow, and I was just like, wow, this history answers so many questions I was left asking back in 2002. It'd be great if I could bring these stories to a wider audience. And I thought that graphic novels would be a really good platform for doing that, just because it's just such a narrative-based medium. After thinking about this project, I decided to approach Stephen Kinzer at a book signing. And I sort of cold pitched him on the spot as he was signing my copy of All the Shaw's Men. And he looks up and he goes, yeah, I think it'd be a great idea to turn these into graphic novels. And I was sort of stunned and was like, wow, okay. And I got his buy-in and we decided to set off and do it in earnest. So that's sort of what started us on our path.
So Operation Ajax is the first project to come out of Cognito?
Correct. It is, yeah.
Excellent. Well, let's give the audience a bit of background on the comic and the if people aren't familiar with this era of history, does one of you want to take a crack at giving us a sort of 3 to 4 minute synopsis of what the comic's about, what the story is?
Sure. So Operation Ajax is the true story of the CIA-backed coup against Iran's government in 1953 called Operation Ajax. It was the first time that we as a nation used the CIA for covert action against a foreign country and was the first official mission by the CIA. And it set a really interesting precedent in that it was all covert. It was the idea that America could have broad impact on foreign nations without direct war, and to instead use more of a covert style of operating. And the result of Operation Ajax is that it ended up creating quite a serious rift between the United States and Iran, and has many broad-sweeping implications for today. If you look at sort of the implications of why we went in there, the sort of backstory is more about the relationship with Britain and Iran around the oil politics at the time. Iran was trying to nationalize its oil. Britain had dominated the region for many years and had a control over Iran's oil. And as Iran nationalized, along with many other countries at the time that were doing this, it really upset the British. There was a lot of friction between their countries, and the British ended up getting kicked out of Iran, and the British decided to come to America and ask for our help to help them depose the leader of Iran and allow Britain to have its oil back.
I've found, I've been sort of telling this story to people for years and years and years, and I find that most Australians, and certainly, I mean, I have an American wife, I have a lot of American friends. Most Americans that I've spoken to, including most Australians, have no idea about this period of history and what happened. Do you think that's a reflection of the general public? People just don't know about this event?
Yeah, I'd say that's a fair assessment. If you ask the average person that I know here, a lot of people sort of draw a blank when you mention Operation Ajax. It's one of the reasons why I thought it was such a key story to tell.
Why do you think so few people know this story? I mean, I often say to people, if we get into a discussion about the Middle East in Iran and why the Arabs so-called hate the West or hate America, I say, do you know what happened in 1953 in Iran? And people look at me blankly. Why is it, do you think, that people are so ignorant about this event?
Well, Gore Vidal once described this as the United States of amnesia, and I'm not entirely sure what the socio sort of economic or cultural reasons for that are. But I think that we're just a country that's much more focused on present events culturally. We're a young country. We only have a couple hundred years of history ourselves. And I think it's really easy to stay focused on such a quick-changing, sort of mainstay of the world that we're in, instead of thinking back critically, looking beyond, 1979, for example, which is, I think, if you ask most Americans, that's what they remember as being the major turning point.
The White Revolution under the Ayatollah Khomeini.
Right.
Yeah, myself, just to hop in, I think that if you look at the kind of defining actions or defining incidents that have kind of shaped American perception of the Middle East, you'd be looking at the revolution and then certainly September 11th. And so I think those two things dominate the news cycle so much, have dominated the news cycle so much that we don't tend to go back prior to that. I don't think people remember that Iran was very pro-U.S. in the 60s, right? I mean, under the Shah, the U.S. and Britain and Iran all had this kind of, very fruitful, profitable relationship, which was what Ajax was designed to create, right? And, I think that just the record scratched in 1979, and it's just never been on track since. And people, if you don't go much past that, you don't understand the origins of why that happened in 1979.
Yeah, I find that's true. And I'm not just pointing the finger at Americans here, because, as I said, Australians are just as ignorant about these sort of events in history. We kind of forget that before the end of World War II, many of the countries that are basket cases now in the Middle East, including Israel, Palestine, Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, and also in Africa, places like Zimbabwe, Uganda, were colonialized. They were run in large part by the British and before then the Turks. And a lot of the problems that exist in those parts of the world today can be traced directly back to colonialization and the long-term effects of that. But we don't get taught that, at least in school here. We don't get taught, colonialization was a really, really stupid idea and it really fucked a lot of people up.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt. I was really lucky when I was in the high school, but my American history professor made us read A People's History of the U.S. by Howard Zinn.
Howard Zinn, excellent.
Yeah, and I mean, you give that to a 16-year-old, and it's just like, holy shit, you want to blow somebody's mind? Get them while they're young. I was very, very lucky in Houston, Texas, of all places, wow, to kind of have that as part of our curriculum. And I don't think that everybody gets that luxury, you know, to be exposed to kind of revisionist history, or not even, I don't like the phrase revisionist, but, you know, certainly history told from the point of view of somebody other than the winners.
Yeah, it's a very powerful book. It's a book that I've talked about a lot on this show. The other book that I often recommend is Legacy of Ashes by Tim Weiner. Have you read that?
I have, actually. I've read most of it.
Again, a powerful book, and gives a different perspective on, you know, the history of the United States intervention in a lot of democratic countries over the last 60-odd years. I wanted to ask you guys about the kind of feedback that you've had. I know that you've had a tremendous amount of positive feedback on the app and on the comic and the story. Have you got any negative feedback? Are people accusing you of any anti-American activities by publishing a story that, on the surface, is critical of the CIA?
No, so far, I mean, it's been overwhelmingly positive. I think as we get an opportunity to have more of a narrative with people about the project, we may have an opportunity to talk more about that. But so far, everyone's been like, wow, thank you so much for introducing this story to me. I had no idea. You know, I never would have discovered this if I hadn't, you know, had been presented in such a dynamic format, et cetera, et cetera. So far, it's been overwhelmingly positive.
Congratulations. That's great. I was explaining to Brian off air that for the last 5 or 6 years, I've been producing a podcast series on Napoleonic history, and have, you know, found that it's a really interesting platform to introduce what might otherwise be considered a fairly dry, boring subject to a new generation and a new audience. When you were going down the path of developing Operation Ajax as a comic, what was your thinking behind turning it into an iPad app versus a traditional comic?
Well, you know, we did not see the iPad coming, to be honest. It was going to be a printed book, and my role was that of more of a producer at the time. So when Apple announced this product and I was working with an iPhone developer, you know, it really just was this right place, right time sort of meeting of our creative minds over it. And for me, as a having a background in interactivity and really being at the intersection of art and technology, I just saw so many opportunities to really make the content more alive, more dynamic, add value to it, make it a deeper experience. I didn't know how open and how powerful it was going to be. So it really was lucky and fortunate for us that we had such unique opportunity to weave in historical documents and really add a dynamic presentation to something that otherwise could potentially come off as dry or flat or not as engaging.
And of course, for people that haven't read the app or the comic yet, it's not just a 2D traditional graphic novel presentation. There's a lot of not interactivity, but there's a lot of animation is what I was thinking of. There's a lot of audio. And the bit I love the most is that it cuts to video clips of actual news of the world reels from the late 40s, early 50s, talking about these events as they're happening. What a great idea.
Yeah, it was really amazing that, you know, we had all this reference material for the static book. And when we realized we could actually incorporate that material directly into the presentation in a dynamic way, it was just like this eye-opening experience. And the newsreels themselves, you know, were just serving as illustration reference at the time. And we're like, wait a minute, we can license these, we can embed them, we can, you know, make them part of the story, part of the presentation.
Tell me a little bit about the budget and the timeline for a project like this. How long ago did you start?
Well, I originally came up with the idea to do this project as a static printed book in early 2008. And at the time, you know, we were thinking 40 to 60 pages, traditional graphic novel. And it really evolved far beyond anything we expected over time. You know, the story became a much more epic telling. When I was working with my writer, Mike DeSev, it became a 210-page book. And then, of course, all the interactivity and the newfound frontier of the iPad just, you know, became a new lessons every day, so to speak. We were pioneers in the space. It's like figuring out you want to make a book and then someone introduces the printing press the next day and everyone's trying to figure out how to, like, pull the levers and make books. And, you know, not coming from an established field for these types of experiences, we really got to kind of create it. So it definitely became a much larger project in terms of scope and time. And I think that if we were to do another one in the future, which we definitely are planning on, it's going to be a much more predictable experience for us, having spent so much time figuring out how this new world works, so to speak.
You want to give us an indication of budget, or is that top secret?
Ash is giving me the evil eye here.
No, a lot of what we spent was in infrastructure and fumbling around and
tools development,
stumbling in the dark, turning corners. You know, there's a lot that we couldn't give you a line item and say Ajax cost this much, because Cognito cost a certain amount, and part of Cognito is people, and part of its process, and part of it has been working with our partners at Tallchair to do infrastructure.
One's cost of raising a company and the other is cost of doing a project. They're sort of, it's hard to separate those two for this particular.
We didn't spend $1 million, but we didn't spend $100 either.
Right.
How's that?
I see a great career in politics for both of you.
Thank you.
Can you talk about the size of the team? How many people involved in something like this? I mean, a traditional comic's got 2-3 people. You got the writer, you got the inker, you got the person doing the coloring. How many people in something like Operation Ajax?
Well, most of the work went into the art generation, for sure. We had several different teams, several different approaches to try to generate the content for the book itself. The entire book has been built in printed format, but all the pages are layered, and we found that it required more of a production methodology rather than a traditional comic workflow for doing this. So we had a team in Bulgaria did the first 4 chapters, and I think that was probably 6 people or so, plus Mike was art directing. And then we had Tyler Jenkins do chapters a little bit of 4, 5, and 6 for us. He's one person doing the inks. We had the same colorist across the whole project. Anton did a great job on that. And then we had Steve Ellis do chapter 7, and then Sergio Paez and Storyboard LLC do the remaining chapters of the book. So right there, you probably have close to 30, maybe more people just on that. Then I had myself and my team of animators. We've had probably about 4 animators work on the project in total. And they're the ones who have been taking the sort of final print formatted layered pages and making them move around. And that was the sort of magic of Cognito's side of that on site. And then we also have Scott Duncan did our sound design. We also had a composer. Mike Gallant did our theme music.
There's Katie Edmonds
did producing sort of the creative production role of wrangling all these resources and making sure that we were, you know, trying to stick to our schedule and making things happen. And then there's Tallchair on top of that. You know, and Tallchair has its own set of resources for programmers and QA and all of that. So all said and told, probably about 60 people worked on this project.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, part of that, too, is once again, you know, us learning and figuring things out. So
sure.
Of course. We're a fairly lean team these days. And I think that, in terms of future work, we have the opportunity to scale up. But we've managed, you know, figured out. A good chunk of those people just worked on the comic itself without even getting into the animation side or the interactive piece. And
if you were to look at just that role, it's probably closer to 15 people if you look at the sort of core of the programming and animation and interactivity.
So you guys have got funding as a startup, or are you self-funded?
We were really lucky. We were in the right place, right time, and got sort of private angel funding for this project, which is a real blessing for us. And we have support going forward. We're in the process of establishing, you know, what we want Cognito to be and what kind of projects we want to work on next.
Daniel, your father's David Berwin, right?
Correct.
Angel investor. That David Berwin?
He is.
Excellent. I'll get you to talk a little bit about the Berwin Education Foundation later on, but because I think that's interesting in and of itself. But just sticking with the comic, tell me about the ambitions for the comic. What do you hope to achieve with it?
Well, I mean, it really started with the desire to educate Westerners, Americans primarily, about, you know, all this shared history we have with all these countries that's never really talked about in a mainstream public forum. So my hope is that people will, you know, read this book and their assumptions will be challenged and it'll change their perspective and hopefully for the better. And in doing so, improve the relationship between Iran and the United States. I think on the longer tail of that, you know, understanding our history is just important, period. It really provides context and reference for, you know, the situation we face today as a global community. And the more common understanding we have of our shared experiences, the better off we'll be for, you know, being able to figure out how to all cooperate with each other and get along in an increasingly finite world.
Are you able to share with us download numbers?
So I can speak to that a little bit.
I can hear Ash going into politician mode here.
Such a killjoy. We tripled our first week estimates. I think we're at a point right now where we're not really at liberty to talk about our download numbers, but we've had well into the five digits download Operation Ajax. I can say that much.
And for an indie comic book.
For an indie comic book, we're huge. Dancing. Yeah, we're absolutely nuts over it. So, you know, we tripled our first week forecasts. We peaked at number 4 on the iOS store in the U.S. under free book apps. So you would go into the book section and it was iBook, Kindle, Nook, and then us. So we're pretty happy with the response we've gotten.
Wow. Yeah, look, I asked that because, as I indicated before, this Napoleon show that I did, I mean, we've had 30 to 40,000 listeners a month tuning into a show about, you know, a guy who died 200 years ago in France, where I know that my co-host on that show is the president of the International Napoleonic Society and a Napoleonic author. And, you know, I know most Napoleonic authors are lucky to sell sort of 5 to 10,000 copies of a book when it comes out. And most of those are bought by Napoleonic academics. And so to reach an audience that's 4 or 5 times that of people that are just members of the general public has been hugely exciting for us in terms of teaching this audience about a historical era that we're interested in and passionate about. And so I was interested to see how your comic is reacting. Of course, it's not just an indie comic, but it's an indie comic about a fairly difficult and, in most people's eyes, ancient subject. So
sure, yeah.
That's terrific.
Yeah, I can absolutely guarantee you that we have had way more eyeballs on Operation Ajax going the route that we did than if we had put it to print and been sold in, you know, comic book stores.
Yeah, that's just the upshot of being in this new platform. I mean, we have international distribution instantaneously.
Yeah.
And half our audience is overseas. It's really cool to realize that we suddenly have a global presence for such a, you know, for being a small company.
Yeah.
You had any feedback from Iranian readers?
Yeah, we worked with a couple on the project. One of our researchers is Amir Abadi, who's pretty active at Berkeley. And so far, it's been positive. You know, I've actually had a couple of conversations where people are like, what is this thing you've done? And, you know, at first, they're suspicious and worried that it's going to be some sort of, like, damaging account of this and not be helping the very cause I'm trying to actually help. But once we actually get engaged and they see the content, the feedback is actually always positive as far as, wow, you've actually done your homework and this looks like a very good depiction and things like that. So, so far the Iranian response has been positive.
What kind of iPad penetration do they have in Iran? Any idea?
Oh, yeah, no clue. Yeah, I don't think about the iPads for sale, much less what their iOS, you know, we don't have any, so I can tell you that we don't have any downloads in Iran, and I'm guessing that the likelihood of there being and in fact, aren't there trade? I think there are actually trade restrictions so that U.S. companies can't export to Iran.
I mean, I suppose it's different if you're talking about Iranian Americans versus Iranian
nationals.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I don't know the demographics for the U.S., but I don't think that Apple's actually allowed to sell iPads in Iran. I could be mistaken about that, but.
Well, of course, yeah, there might be restrictions on trading with Iran, but, you know, unless you've got Oliver North on your side, he can do all sorts of things. Oh, somebody's typing very loudly in my ear.
Sorry.
That's all right. All right, guys, well, let's talk about future projects. Can you talk about what you're planning now? What's next?
Sure. So the first thing we're doing is we're bringing Operation Ajax to the phone, which is really exciting for us. We feel like not only will it get us a very a larger market share and more awareness, but it's been a great exercise in looking at the flexibility and power of the Active Reader tool for adapting this story to different screen formats. So that should be coming out, I think, in January. We're on task for that. And then beyond that, we have another project in the works. You know, as you've mentioned, Operation Ajax is not just a static document that's been scanned and put on the iPad. It's fully interactive. It has a full soundtrack. It's got animation. And that's just the tip of the iceberg of what this technology can do. And it's actually very powerful. It's built on top of Unity, which is a commonly used game engine. I don't know if people have played Shadowgun. It's a fairly well-known title. But that's the same technology that drives Ajax. And so our next property, it's different. It's less in terms of scope of quantity of actual written and illustrated content, but it pushes the platform in new ways. We're really excited to show people that when it's ready.
Not going to give us any hints?
Not right now.
Whenever I get shifty, I look over at Ash and I'm going, am I allowed to talk?
If you keep your eyes on Cognito Comics, though, in 2012, we'll be able to tell you more there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Ash, can you just say one thing for me? I wanted to hear you say, I did not have sex with that woman. I just want to hear that.
I did not. Yeah, I did not have sex with that woman.
Okay. I believe you.
I think, you know, one of the things that we plan on doing with the CognitoComics.com website is actually using that as a springboard to talk a little bit more right now. It's just kind of a product site. But we plan on, you know, launching a Cognito blog next year, later this year, or, you know, sometime in the next 3 weeks or next year, getting a blog up there so that we, you know, can have more of a dialogue with people about the goings-on here and
all the issues that we address
Ajax
as a company.
In the media. Yeah. I mean, you know, we're having these conversations internally, and one of the things that you know, we have the opportunity to do as a startup is have some of those conversations externally too.
Right.
So.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to your future projects. So let's talk a little bit about I know that Daniel will want to look at Ash here, but let's talk about American politics for a little bit. Obviously, things are heating up over Iran and over Pakistan at the moment. You know, as Americans, what's your sense about what's going on in the end of 2011 with America's position geopolitically? Something obviously you're both interested in.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's funny. The struggle for me is like always keeping abreast of all the latest developments while also, you know, making sure things don't catch fire and keep operating as planned here. But I don't know. I guess for me, the sort of the larger thing behind it all is that you know, we are dealing with finite resources, and we're going to just have to constantly be figuring out how we're going to make it all work. Ultimately, Pakistan and has a unique background with the United States, given you know our relationship there with the Soviet Union and how we have had an interesting, I don't know, I guess legacy with them that's also parallel and related to the same stories of Ajax.
I think it's fascinating, and every 2 weeks you turn on the news and something else that came out of Operation Ajax is blowing up, isn't it? I mean, you know, we've got the embassy getting stormed,
right.
Like, and Britain, last week.
And now Britain's asking for all of Iranian diplomats to leave.
So, I mean, it's, you know, this stuff is, there's still blowback from these events from 60 years ago. It's certainly here in the States. We've also got our own kind of internal political movement that's been taking root and, you know, with the Occupy movement. And so that's been fascinating to watch and see how it's been going all over the, you know, all over the country. So I think we're at a point where people have been unhappy with the way things are going, both internally and externally, for a number of years. And we're seeing manifestations of that unhappiness everywhere. I mean, I think the economic crisis in 2008 was a global one, and you know, people are fed up with it not getting better.
Yeah, and when you see things like, I remember the attempt at a green revolution in Iran, was it a year ago, 2 years ago, maybe now?
I think it was 2009, yeah.
It was pre-Arab Spring, and it was the whole Twitter-led, Facebook-led Iranian People's Revolution. I mean, it was very hard after you've read Legacy of Ashes and you've read Howard Zinn. And now, after you've read Operation Ajax, the iPad comic, to look at things like that going on and wonder to yourself, well, what is the CIA's involvement in this? Is this a false flag revolution? Is this being funded by external elements? Do you find yourselves asking those same questions?
Yeah, well, it's funny. One of the products of the conversation I had recently with an Iranian national about these ideas was, if America steps in and tries to influence this in any way, it illegitimizes any internal movements within Iran. And because of the, you know, the history there, people are so suspicious, and obviously, you know, there's a lot of distrust. It's frustrating because I think that there's potential to you know, help in some way, but I don't know what that looks like without creating the same, you know, errors of the past. I mean, I see, I mean, even myself as someone who's on the sideline, you know, watching from a distance, wanting to help, you know, the goings-on of these other countries, you know, how do you provide that help? How do you become a positive force without, you know, the same bad patterns repeating themselves? And I don't know the answer to that, but it's definitely something I wonder about a lot. And I do hope that going forward, you know, as we look for more constructive ways to you know, help each other out as nations, new options arise where we can be supportive of political movements and we can do so in a positive way, in one that honors the integrity of the intention of the country and doesn't somehow sway it for, you know, other motivations, you know, potentially ones that are solely in the interest of the United States.
Yeah. And I think one of the other lessons that we can take away from the Operation Ajax story is that the publicly released version of events isn't necessarily the full and complete version of events. And as members of the general public, it behooves us to be suspicious of what we're being told by our political leaders at all times, just because there's this very, very long track record of the people getting lied to or the actual events being spun by political leaders in the media. And to think that things have changed at some stage in the last 60 years, I think is a little bit naive.
Of course, absolutely. Exactly. I mean, that's the legacy we're up against. It's one of the reasons why I see the iPad as a powerful platform for this, is because now, you know, even things like news can't be, they don't have to be passive experiences. You can comment, you can criticize, you can upvote, downvote, you can self-curate to a degree and try to clear the noise out of the system a bit so that people can get better access to information. And I think that's one of the biggest threats to the status quo right now, is people becoming more aware, more educated, and leveraging all of these you know, technological platforms to become more informed citizens and to communicate with each other. You know, you look at some of the stuff that's trying to come up through Congress now. We've got I forget the name of the act, but it allows American citizens to be detained on our own soil. You know, that's really scary to think about. You know, that in relationship to, you know, the Protect IP Act, I think it's called, misleadingly, which is designed to, you know, keep sites from like YouTube and other things like that from having copyrighted material on them and allowing people to, you know, be persecuted for that. So there's a lot of those forces at play. And I hope that we're able to maintain a system that allows us as citizens to continue to have a voice, to continue to educate ourselves in an unbiased manner.
Have rich and challenging conversations about stuff that's going on.
Right.
And be able to actually question whatever prevailing message there is and dig out and get some truth out of things.
Question the official version of the truth.
Absolutely.
Guys, what do you think Steve Jobs would have thought of your comic? Obviously, he probably didn't live long enough to see it, but do you ever think about what he would have thought?
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I just read his biography. And
me too.
You know, I don't know. As a quick aside, I mean, I grew up in the Bay Area, and I remember a lot of those product launches and a lot of the legacy of that company being intertwined with my own life. You know, one of the things that I respect about Steve Jobs and conversely Pixar, I guess Lasseter was the character, was the guy sort of referenced in his biography most prominently, was their commitment to quality and being artists first, and believing that, well, if you just do an excellent job, you know, the rest will sort of fall into play. And I know that we've definitely pushed things back many times during our production process because we want it to be perfect. And everybody who's worked on this project has totally committed from an artistic excellence perspective to try to go the extra mile and make every aspect of Ajax just shine. And it's really touching and emotional for me to feel that, because, you know, at the end of the day, like, it's hard to just say, no, you have to let go of this and we have to shift. You know, we always want to make the sound a little bit better or the animation more refined or try to polish the writing just a little bit more. But I think that Steve Jobs would respect that commitment to excellence. And I hope that we really have hit a bar of quality that people can respect and enjoy.
And I think he was all about changing the world and making a dent in the universe, as he said. And I think what you're doing with Operation Ajax certainly has the potential to do that as well.
Yeah, I'd hope that if he was to see what we had done with his device, he'd be like, aha, that's exactly what you're supposed to do with this. I read that he supposedly was trying to revolutionize textbooks and learning materials, and it's also something that I have a passion for. I've been an educator for 4 years, and I see a lot of potential in how we can change the way we engage with our education.
Yeah, I guess that was the biggest impression I got with your comic, was that it was such a fantastic approach to educating people in a new and innovative way, in a very engaging way that engages all of your senses. I think it's very profound, very exciting.
Yeah, you know, I have a hard time fitting into the academic model of how education works. I'm an artist, I'm a visual learner, you know, and I definitely struggled a lot in high school trying to keep up with a lot of these topics. And so I kind of made the product that I would want to have read when I was like 17 or 18 years old, you know, yeah. And using myself as the metric for that.
Awesome. Okay, just before we wrap up, Daniel, can you? I read a little bit about the Berwyn Education Foundation. Can you talk to us for a couple of minutes about the mission?
Yeah, so my parents are they're basically retired now. They spend their time as philanthropists, and they used to be much more wrapped up in the venture capital world, and they also travel extensively. And this education foundation has been something that they started years ago to send promising high school students from Mountain View High School to college who didn't have the means to do so. They were selected through the AVID program, and then they would have to apply to get in. And they just love to mentor people. I think that that's just part of their DNA. And one of their side projects is that they helped rebuild a school in Nepal. And it's just sort of a reflection, I guess, of my parents' values. They believe in the power of education, the power of opportunity. And the Berwyn Education Foundation is a separate, completely separate from anything that Cognito's been doing. But I think the passion for wanting to help people, you know, achieve in whatever way that looks like is definitely a parallel mission between myself and my folks.
Yeah, I just saw an interesting trend there, perhaps passed on from generation to generation, about the power of education and the importance of education. I thought that was interesting to see. Your parents like the comic?
Oh, they're extremely proud of me. They're my biggest fans, you could say, and it's been a real blessing. I think the older I get, the more I realize what a blessing it is to have parents who will support you and are just, you know, constantly rooting you on and trying to do whatever they can to make sure that you're successful. So, they're stoked, and I couldn't have done it without them. So, I am definitely grateful for that relationship.
All right. Well, the comic is called Operation Ajax. You can find it in the App Store. Cognito Comics is the company. Daniel and Ash, the two brains behind it. Thanks very much for chatting with us, guys. And once again, congratulations. I think it's one of the most exciting things I've seen on the iPad so far.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, we definitely appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having us on our show.